Hello, and welcome to the Movie Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo. In this episode, we'll have a spoiler-filled discussion about a movie we think you'll enjoy. I am joined by my sister Kay, and we're going to have a spoiler-filled discussion on the Wonder Woman movie. We just watched that on Blu-ray. We're going to spoil not only that, almost certainly Batman vs. Superman Dawn of Justice. What was the Superman movie before that? Man of Steel?
Yes.
And certainly I think we're going to talk about a lot of the Marvel movies as a part of this.
I was thinking Adrian Carter might come up.
Yeah, it's funny because I would almost say this film felt like a mishmash of kind of, I'm going to say, Thor with the otherworldly realm and society and such.
Okay.
Captain America, First Avenger for the World War II period, please.
Okay.
Certainly 300 for the slow-mo fight scenes.
There was that.
And it was not a bad film. It was enjoyable.
Well,
I'm not going to say it's a great film.
For me, it had some of the Peggy Carter teams up with the Howling.
The Commandos, yes.
Yes.
And there was an aspect of that in the first Avenger film for Cap. But there's a part of me thinking, like with the extended scene or whatever they had on the Blu-ray, where they tease another adventure for these Etta Candy and the others with the Mother Box, that it's presumably kind of supposed to tie into the Justice League film or whatever.
Mm.
And if you look at the current DC cinematic universe, or whatever you want to call it, you've got very direct parallels to the Marvel cinematic universe. Justice League is clearly a parallel to the Avengers thematically. It's the team movie.
Yeah.
This, I would say, kind of sort of parallel to, again, Captain America, First Avenger. I would say Batman v Superman Dawn of Justice, kind of sort of like Captain America Civil War, two of the lead heroes fighting each other.
Yeah.
And then I would say Man of Steel kind of is the placeholder for Iron Man, the first movie, in so much as that's what launches the universe, effectively.
Mm.
And with this, starting with a framing sequence of modern day, she gets the original photo or whatever that we had seen in Batman v Superman Dawn of Justice, you know, I was surprised by that. I figured it would just start back, you know, with basically where they cut to at the end of the opening framing sequence. Just, we've got young Diana.
Yeah. The framing sequence was only necessary to tie it into the rest of the series of films.
Absolutely. That's why they had it at the beginning, which, not a bad. It's like, oh, okay, this is set in the past. At the end, when they come out of the framing sequence and she hears something and then goes leaping off or whatever, I'm like, what did she hear? What is she going after?
And that was only done to say, and now she's a superhero.
Yeah, very much.
That was the only part that told me, and now she's Wonder Woman. Without that, she's not Wonder Woman.
Yeah, I would have to go back to Captain America First Avenger. I don't recall if they had a framing sequence there or not.
Or did they
just have a scene at the end that would tease he was frozen in the ice and would get found later? I think that actually ended.
Yeah, with the plane crash.
With him, well, actually, I thought with him getting thawed out and realizing he was in the modern day with Nick Fury.
Mm.
Again, definite parallels of we've got to have a story set in the past to give the backstory, and then we move current day to tie it in with everything else.
Yeah.
The use of the magic lasso I thought was well done. There were a couple of times with it in some of the fight scenes where it felt like we've cut from the live actors to the video game footage.
Yeah.
This
was a different Steve Trevor than I'm used to, in terms of this Steve Trevor was, for lack of a better phrase, he was in on it. He knew right from the get-go that she was...
Well, he essentially set up the secret identity almost.
Yeah.
It's funny because Chris Pine, I thought, did a good job.
Oh, he did a great job.
But this is kind of the second of, or one of two roles I'm going to reference. He's probably had others that have been done by other people before, but he's played Captain Kirk.
Yeah.
William Shatner's role.
Yeah.
He's playing Steve Trevor, Lyle Wagner's role.
Yeah.
as if those two actors are interchangeable.
Yeah, well, yeah.
And he did a good job here. He was definitely an in-the-know, super spy kind of... Mm-hmm. But it worked. It played.
Well, he did a great job, like, when they're walking down the street, and I'm having to remind myself, okay, it's, you know, 1918, 1920, thereabouts, and the front of her coat comes open, and she doesn't care. Her armor's peeking through. What does she mind? But he's sitting there going, no, you're not clothed, you know, and he does a great job with that awkward, you're indecent.
Mm-hmm.
Reaction, and we need to take you to buy clothing. He handled that really well.
There's an aspect of he's trying to be a gentleman, even though he may not be quite the gentleman he's trying to be.
Yeah, yeah.
I thought the two characters played well together. Yeah. He was not intimidated by her or a kind of either dismissive or...
He seemed to have a good understanding of... Our goals are not at cross purposes. They're not 100% aligned, but they're closely aligned enough. We can work together. We just have to prioritize.
Well, and he was never trying to play her.
Exactly, yeah.
But there were certain times where he thought the mission was going to go and where she took it.
Yeah.
Differed.
Yeah, well, and he was constantly trying to think through and talk her through. Look, the mission we're on will save lives. Whether we can save all the lives today, or we have to do something today that will save as many lives as possible tomorrow. Because if we stop every 3 feet to help every person we meet, we'll never get to the destination to save a million lives.
He was focusing more on the big picture while she was at risk of getting lost in the details.
Yeah.
And yeah. I thought that was well played.
Yeah.
Because he was never coming across as callous.
Exactly.
So much as struggling. It's like, yes, we want to help them, but...
Yeah.
That's the symptom, not the disease.
Yeah. Yeah.
He did a good job setting that out there and trying to kind of keep her focused.
And never leaving her hanging out to dry. When she got out of the trenches and went to fight the Germans, he realized she's pulling all the fire, which means we can go to the sides and back her up.
Mm-hmm. Well, and there wasn't a sense of exasperation of, well, she's done it again.
Yeah.
I've got to pick up the pieces or anything. It's like, she's doing that. She's doing it successfully. How can we leverage that? He played the cards he was getting dealt. And was very quick to adapt to that.
Yeah.
And to the point where when they were in the square and he has the other two guys
yes.
hold up the door, whatever was remaining of one of the tanks or whatever.
Yeah.
And, you know, sets it up for her to jump on that to get up.
And he calls out SHIELD like he'd heard the Amazons call out on the beach.
Because exactly. He'd seen that early on. I thought they did a good job. You know, going back to that beach scene, setting up Themyscira as to how it could be kind of right there and nobody see it and find it.
Yeah.
It was something that it seemed like if you sailed within, I don't know, whatever the size of the island is, plus a little more, I mean, people should have just bumped into it more often than not, because I took it to be not far off Greece.
The piercing of the veil was fascinating to me, in part because I couldn't help but wonder if she had somehow thinned the veil the first time her gauntlets activated the shockwave.
That never occurred to me, but okay, that makes sense.
Because it was right after that first shockwave she ever did that the plane came through and crashed.
Okay. I had taken it because that I didn't make that connection, but it makes a certain degree of sense. To me, that's something that we almost need to read into it.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, it seemed like anything that would go, it's like you can't see it, but if you fly through it, you fly through it.
Because I sat there wondering, okay, so why haven't other people flown through it before? But then I thought, well, maybe she thinned it. Maybe she damaged it somehow. What did she do with that shockwave?
I took it as, well, how many people fly in that area?
See, I kept trying to figure out, okay, where are we? Are we near, like you said, near Greece? Are we near Turkey? Where was he flying from? how off the beaten path are we?
Well, and begs the question of what exactly was he doing there again? Even when we get the stuff later and he's gotten on the plane to escape mm-hmm. them or whatever, it doesn't explain how he's the German Navy or whatever's gotten after him.
Well, he's flying from Turkey to Britain to deliver the journal. And presumably the guy who's chasing him has told all forces to be going after that plane.
So there was a gap, though, that you had to read in.
Yeah, agreed.
Which isn't a problem. It worked. And it's funny because we've got the framing sequence. She's flashing back to all of this, gets to where it's like, well, what are you doing on the island, Steve? And now he's flashing back.
Yeah.
You know, so there's flashbacks within flashbacks, which it worked, but only because the framing sequence around the whole movie was, frankly, fairly thin.
Yeah. Like I said, that was only there to orient us to, yes, this really is connected to Batman v Superman.
Yeah.
Now, okay, I avoid spoilers. We've established that in the past. But I want to, first of all, give my friends credit. They didn't spoil the movie for me, mm-hmm. which I'm thankful for. But a lot of them were commenting when it came out in the theaters like crazy that the one thing they wanted me to know was how grateful they were to finally see, and they phrased it this way, a genuinely strong woman character on film. Not a surface strong woman character, not a woman who was considered strong because she had a weapon in her hands, but a woman who was in every way strong. And I was fascinated by that, so I kept that in mind while I was watching it. And what I think was really resonating with my friends and what they were latching on to was she was morally strong.
Mm-hmm.
She was ethically strong. She had a genuine strength of character as well as being physically strong and battle strong, etc.
Well, if you look at the film, the main female characters in the film, of which there are
very few.
I'm going to say five.
Okay.
Ish.
Okay. Who are you counting?
Wonder Woman, obviously.
Okay.
Okay. Well,
I think it's unfair to call her Wonder Woman.
Whatever.
Diana.
Diana, for lack of...
Yeah, that, okay.
You know the character I'm talking about.
Well, the only reason I say that is because she didn't have the headgear I was expecting. She had more of the V.
They took the typical one and flipped it upside down.
Is that what it was?
Instead of going up to a point, it went down.
Her mother had the one I thought looked more Wonder Woman-y. With the top part, not the sides, but the top part. Okay, sorry.
Anyways.
Mm-hmm.
Lead character.
Okay.
Strong female.
Yes.
The main villain, excluding Ares, Dr. Poison.
Okay.
Smart, go-getting female character.
Mm-hmm. Now, would you say that, because from my perspective, we didn't see a lot of physical strength from her. It seemed to be that she realized, I don't know what happened to her face, but she could compensate with her mind.
Well, one could argue that whatever had disfigured her, she has worked through that, implying a certain amount of physical wherewithal.
Okay, good point. Yeah.
Overcoming a handicap or whatever trauma she had had.
See, I couldn't decide if she had gone into the sciences initially to heal herself.
Or was this a result of botched experiments?
Yeah, okay.
We have no idea. We don't get enough to know.
Yeah.
But, so, the main crux of the fight, arguably, is between two females.
Yeah.
Two of the other female characters that were strong were Diana's mother and aunt.
I felt the aunt was significantly stronger than the mother.
I would agree with that. And frankly, I thought the more likable of the two.
Yeah.
But again, I wouldn't consider Hippolyta just a, you know, pushover or anything.
Not pushover, but driven by a lot of fears.
I didn't take it as driven by fear, but the maternal instinct was kind of overriding the duty. She wanted to spare Diana the path she was fated to go down.
She was overly protective of Diana and lying to Diana so much that I was afraid the revelation of her father was going to be that Ares was her father.
Yeah, I didn't expect that, but there were a lot of Hippolyta didn't tell Diana many things,
mm-hmm.
and that put Diana at a disadvantage.
Mm-hmm.
But the other female character in the film, particularly with the extended scene of Etta.
Yeah.
Strong female character.
I adored her.
DC equivalent to Agent Carter.
Oh, interesting. Okay. Yeah.
The non-godlike, you know, woman warrior in a man's war.
It's funny because she was reminding me, because she had so little time on screen, of the gal in Agent Carter who is the fake switchboard operator.
Oh, yeah. I can see that because she's definitely second fiddle to just about everybody in this film.
Mm-hmm. But she's kind of, you know, the power behind the scenes.
Yeah.
And the gatekeeper you have to get through and a lot of things like that. I really liked the character. I thought the clothes shopping scene was fantastic. Though at first, I honestly didn't know where we were. I don't know if I didn't catch that we were entering Selfridges.
We entered a building and it was a little unclear at first. Is this an office building, a hotel, or whatever? Oh, I guess it's a big department store of the era.
It took me until the misunderstanding at the corsets to begin to understand where we were.
There wasn't enough before that to give us a clue.
Okay, I feel better. I was afraid I missed something.
In other words, if I found out they had shot that in a hotel lobby, I wouldn't be surprised.
Okay.
But all of the main female characters, I thought, were well-treated, strong, interesting women. There wasn't the damsel in distress or the...
Well, and I noticed after the clothes shopping scene, after the Etta, can you take possession of the sword and the shield, which I thought was fantastic, that too, in terms of the, you know, basically Diana just can't conceal those with the outfit and she can't discreetly carry them.
Yeah.
Can you? Right. So that was a good handoff. But we've got Steve Trevor and Diana going down the street one direction, Etta going the opposite direction. And I noticed Etta noticing people.
I noticed that too, and I was a little confused. Was she... I thought she was waiting for them to, like, turn the corner so she could just leave the sword. I mean...
I couldn't tell what she noticed, but it was clear she's noticed something.
And the payoff, when they're in that alleyway, have defeated them, one of them's running off, and Etta's there with Diana's sword.
Oh, it was beautiful.
Yeah. This is a... Don't underestimate Etta.
Yeah, I thought that was well done.
She's a tough character to deal with, or that many writers have struggled, creators have struggled dealing with. Is she just the secretary? Is she, you know, this incredible warrior of her in her own right? Is she just the best friend of Diana or the love interest of Steve Trevor? Where does she fit in this?
Well, I thought both the writers and the actress found just the perfect balance of kind of everything for her in that moment, in part because she was kind of awkwardly trying to balance the sword above the shopping bags.
Yeah. Well, it's funny because with Superman, you've got Lois Lane and Jimmy Olsen.
Mm-hmm.
And I would argue that with Wonder Woman, you've got Steve Trevor and Etta.
Was Etta in the TV series with Linda Carr?
Not that I recall, but
okay,
I don't remember.
I don't recall her.
But she's been in the comics forever and a day and has had some very different interpretations. Mm-hmm. And
she was new to me and I was just, or at least she felt new to me. You know what I mean? It's been so long since I watched the Lyle Wagner TV show that I wanted to make sure I wasn't imagining she was new to me.
Most people refer to it as the Linda Carter TV show, but
know.
Okay.
Just, you know, I was trying for variety.
With Superman, you typically have Lois and Jimmy around.
Yeah.
With Wonder Woman, when you do either movies, TV shows, or even during the comics, those characters can fall by the wayside. And if one of them comes back, it's always going to be Steve Trevor. Sometimes you get Etta. Sometimes you just don't. And if you go back to the animated Wonder Woman movie they did a couple of years back, Steve Trevor, you know, front and center. He's one of the go-to characters. Of course, if I recall correctly, the villain of that movie was also Ares. If you're dealing with the Greco-Roman gods, the god of war is an obvious go-to.
Yeah.
And you can play him as the antagonist, even if he's not necessarily evil.
Yeah.
You know, he's just being himself or whatever.
Yeah.
What's interesting is in the comics at one point, he got killed off and replaced, and there was another God of War, Diana.
Oh, yeah.
So, having her and him as siblings in this movie worked.
Yeah.
And in the comics, they're starting to explore who is her brother.
When it was interesting having a very young, I mean, I'm used to a naive and still learning Diana, but young, fresh off the island, first encountering so much of our world.
It'd be a mistake to skip over that because that's where you get some of the humorous elements, some of the fish out of water. There's a lot of story material there.
There is. I mean, just so many great revelations about our society, our world, and even placing it back. I mean, Chris Pine probably had one of the best lines when she's saying, "What war?" And he's saying, you know, the war to end all wars.
Kind of a, how do you not know?
Well, but even just the name of it, the war to end all wars.
Yeah. Well, and then he's listing off, you know, 25 million dead, most of the countries are in it, and just kind of a, how isolated is this island?
Yeah. Well, and he's kind of glancing down at the lasso, realizing I'm compelled to tell the truth, but I don't want to believe I'm telling the truth, but I know I'm telling the truth.
Yeah.
How horrible is this?
He seemed to be, and I thought they portrayed it well, is a bit of a reluctant hero.
Yes.
If he had had his druthers, he would not be the man he had become.
Yeah.
He didn't want to be in the war, but he couldn't not be.
Well, he had that great line also of, I tried doing nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, again, the situation kind of forcing him down that path, and then the guys he works with being similar.
Yeah.
That's not the destiny they had sought out, but they've taken what they're good at and leveraged it as best they could.
Yeah.
And I thought those guys were interesting. And clearly they had cast and known what they were doing to have that photo in time for Batman v Superman.
I thought those guys got interesting and good about the time we got to that little town.
Yeah.
With the church. That was when the payoff started happening.
Exactly. That's when we realized they are not the guys that we were sold them or told that they were.
Yeah.
You know, when you get some of the exposition and then what you see doesn't match and they say, yeah, well, you know, nobody gets to be the hero of their own story all the time.
Yeah.
Or whatever the guy's line was. We can't always be what we dream to be or whatever.
Yeah. Well, and I don't recall their exact toast, but they had kind of the joke amongst themselves.
Something about getting what we're owed, but not what we deserve. Or
yeah, may you always get what you want. Or may you always... Yeah.
Yeah, I don't remember. It was a good one.
Yeah. It ended with, but not what you deserve.
Yeah. And in the extended scene on the Blu-ray, them kind of essentially toasting to Steve.
Yeah.
With that same thing. I thought that was good. And again, that's the kind of thing that quickly establishes these guys have known each other a while. They've had some adventures.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we don't need to have seen them all.
Well, and I think that stuff like that was kind of why they reminded me of the Howling Commandos.
Oh, absolutely. They were a not a military unit as such, but they had clearly operated as a team.
Yeah.
And it's funny because at times DC has tried to play Steve Trevor kind of sort of as Nick Fury.
Oh, interesting.
The leader of the super spy organization, that sort of a thing. And sometimes it works okay, other times it seems a little forced. But he's a tough character to know, to place, particularly more in the comics than elsewhere, because typically if you're just doing a Wonder Woman movie, he's the male lead who's hanging with Wonder Woman.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, as long as he can keep up and be interesting, that's about all you really need. If you want to play him for laughs, you want to play him as a really hardened, you know, war guy or whatever, you can do that too. But in the comics, they've done everything from he's, you know, the, you know, government military guy who's the love interest. He is the government liaison with the Justice League who's secretly, or maybe not so secretly, pining after Wonder Woman. Mm-hmm. And again, do they have a romance? Do they not?
Yeah.
And, you know, it built up to that here, but But it's not like the crux of this movie that their relationship was defined as a romance.
Yeah.
You know, they grew attached to each other throughout the progression of the film.
Well, and the way in which it was a crux was that she learned so much through coming to care for any man.
Mm-hmm.
Because that was entirely new to her.
You could potentially classify the subplot as a falling in love story. But I would not say that the relationship between Diana and Steve Trevor here is a traditional love story.
No, I would almost put it as more of a learning about love.
Yeah. Because again, that's part of the joy of doing the right as she's getting off the island, or mm-hmm. Captain America when he first gets out of the ice sort of a thing. You've got the fish out of water. You can have them discover things. It gives you a chance to make comments about society or whatnot. Maybe heavy-handed, maybe not. Here, I thought they did a fairly good job of not being heavy-handed.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, at that point when we're in the village square and the battle is over, and she realizes that Charlie couldn't take a shot, mm-hmm. especially when it mattered, but in general. And it's almost a, why is he on the team if he's not the marksman he's been advertised as? And over the course of that evening and into the next morning, she realizes it's not that he's on the team because he's a marksman. He's on the team because he's part of the team.
Well, and what's funny is if you go back to his introduction, he's the marksman that can hit people so far away you can't even see them. And she questions that, and he's like, it's better that way.
Yeah.
You know, it's not that he necessarily couldn't kill somebody. He just can't do it in a watch.
Yeah.
Which gives him a certain amount of humanity.
Yeah.
That would be lacking if he was just an assassin.
Yeah.
But they also used the rifle and the sight with him essentially being kind of their spotter in many respects.
Yeah. And they use that really well throughout. Yeah.
Yeah.
And, I mean, the chief having smoke signals at one point was kind of funny.
Well, in the comment of, I'm here because everything my people have ever had is gone. She's like, well, who did that? His people, pointing to Steve.
Yes.
It's like, oh. And you could tell she's thinking, but he said he was the good guy.
Yes. Yes.
So there were some moments like that that were a lot of fun. The plot held together. There was enough going on and whatnot. Mm-hmm. We covered, again, the time on the island, her getting off, getting set up, and the big fight and stuff like that at the end. There were a few places where the slow-mo fight scene, it's like, okay, I get the idea. I appreciate that you want me to revel in the acrobaticness of some of this. And some of it, yeah, it was fun, was interesting, was well done.
There were moments, though, where I was sitting there going, guys, I can tell you spent your FX budget. I appreciate it. It's beautiful. But the fact that I'm sitting here mentally thinking to myself, wow, what great use of your effects budget.
To me, it brings to mind the scenes in the X-Men movies with Quicksilver.
Mm, yeah.
Where it's slow motion, but he's going fast. It makes sense.
Yeah.
Here, it was just going slow. But Zack Snyder was attached, and okay, you know, I guess that's the consequence of that or whatever. I thought the fight scenes, by and large, were good. There were some times where it did seem to devolve into video game-ish effects.
Mm-hmm.
And not bad. I mean, they were beautiful.
Yeah.
But there's an aspect where it's like, okay, I'm not seeing the actor. I am seeing their avatar there.
Yeah.
I felt that way in some of the other DC films.
There was at least one fight, and it was over halfway through the film. I forget which one it was, though, where they did a really nice shot. It was Diana doing most of the fighting, and then suddenly, I think it may have actually been in that church square. Yeah, where she realizes, wait a sec, I'm outgunned, and then suddenly someone gets shot. And they just kind of shift the focus enough that you realize Steve Trevor's behind her.
Mm.
And then you kind of can tell she's glancing and seeing him as they pull back. And now you're seeing the two of them fighting.
Well, and when you pull back and see the two of them, because she's doing the stuff with the lasso.
Mm-hmm.
That was when you got just far enough back. One of the places I felt it went to the video game stuff.
It did. It did.
Because the motion ceased to be
natural and fluid.
Natural and fluid, exactly. Yeah.
But it was funny because I really appreciated that moment where she went from, I've bitten off more than I can chew, to, wait a sec, a man has my back.
But I thought that was also very well set up back on the beach scene on the island where he was helping out. And you really got to understand that the Amazons have a definite situational awareness in a battle. And so does he.
Yeah.
Steve Trevor is paying attention enough so that he's able to use some of the moves later.
Yeah.
When needed. And to quickly piece together, it's like, okay, I don't know who these people are, but this is how they are fighting. They are on, they're willing to fight on my side or whatever.
Exactly. They're fighting my enemy. Therefore, yeah, they must be the people I want to fight with, if not my friends.
Well, and also not ones that once the enemy was defeated, he turns on them. He didn't do that.
Exactly. Yeah.
So.
And, I mean, I put that into the, they did a good job of showing, not blatantly telling, the story.
Yes. There was a few places where we get exposition. Most of that when Steve's being interrogated.
Yeah.
But that makes sense.
Yeah.
And even then, we're cutting to the flashback and watching it happen.
Yeah.
While getting a little voiceover of Dr. Poison, this, that, and the other sort of a thing.
Yeah.
So I thought they did a fairly good job in that respect. It's one of those things that in any movie like this, you're always going to have a few things that you've just got to toss in as exposition.
Yeah. It's required. I mean, it's sort of the nature of the beast.
I mean, another way they could have started this film would have been, once upon a time, there were the Amazons.
Yes. Yes.
You know, and I'm glad they didn't do that.
Yeah.
I was disappointed that Steve Trevor did not survive the film.
So was I.
I was kind of hoping they were going to pull what they did on the TV show, where this is senior.
Oh, yeah.
And there's a junior to be had.
Yeah.
To where he could show up later in, you know, Justice League or whatever. But they didn't seem to go that route. I am curious about the TV show because it's been forever since I've watched it. How much of the first season is spent her learning the ways of man's world versus after the first season when they jump forward to modern day, then modern day, which is still the 70s.
Yeah.
What, 50 years ago almost. It's not quite, but yeah.
Yeah.
40, 50, whatever. I felt that this covered, I don't say obvious ground, but you've got to have the origin. What's it like on the island?
Well, it met your expectations story-wise.
I didn't really have any, but it hit the notes that needed to be hit.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't necessarily do the world's greatest job of establishing why does she stay in man's world? Why does she continue to be Wonder Woman? But or why did she stop and then start back up again in Batman v Superman?
Mm-hmm.
There's still more of her story to be told.
Yeah.
But again, I expect some of that in Justice League and the other films they're doing. So I don't need all of that at once. I did think it was a little funny when she's decided she's going to go to man's world with Steve. Got to have the God Killer sword. Okay, that makes sense. Goes into the tower, grabs the truth rope, you know, because sure, that'll be handy. Nobody will miss that. We've just used it to interrogate the strangers. Just the one, but,
And the shield.
And, yeah, well, the shield, that makes sense. You're going to go fight. Okay. Mm-hmm. Shield, sword, got it. The outfit. What was the outfit doing there? It was never established, whatever. That felt a little odd. The headband, having been the ants, was well done.
Yeah.
The bit in the foxhole later when she puts it on, there was something about that. Where did she have that the whole time? You know, why does she suddenly sneak it on this way, you know, so stealthily, you know? But it led to the, she's coming out of the foxhole, walking forward, which I think was the shot they used in the Blu-ray menu.
Yeah, I think so.
And it's not, I mean, it's the hero coming forward against all odds sort of a thing.
Yeah.
We've seen that shot before, at least symbolically. But it pulled together the iconic aspects of the look. Adding the sword and shield, which have been part of the comics for a while, but are not kind of hallmarks going way, 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 way back.
The wrist guards seem to be much bigger gauntlets.
Those started as just kind of the bracelets, but in the last few decades have gotten to where they cover most of the forearm. This happening, I think, alongside of writers realizing that this isn't comics aren't just for kids. Therefore, I don't know, maybe do a little research. This is also one of the things that came after they stopped mixing the Greco, the Greek and the Roman gods. That's why I always refer to the Greco-Roman gods, because I grew up on, you know, great Hera, holy Zeus or whatever, you know, sort of a thing. It's like, wait, they're not in the same...
No, pantheons.
Different pantheons, and mixing them up. Yeah. And it's funny because George Perez, when he took over the title after Crisis Infinite Earths and restarted it all, definitely got all of that stuff correct. But there was also a point in which afterwards they brought in the other pantheon, and it's like you had two sets of gods that looked identical, acted more or less the same, had different names, and they actually had an in-story explanation for some of that.
Oh, how funny.
And I thought that was fun.
Mm-hmm.
Trying to think what else is worth talking about with this film. It was fun, but I'll be honest, it didn't completely blow me away.
No, but I can see where people would want their little girls to aspire to be this Wonder Woman.
Absolutely. Good role model.
Yeah.
I'm not going to argue that at all. She was a caring, compassionate individual, an intelligent one. I thought the child actors they got for the younger versions did a great job.
Mm-hmm.
Particularly the really young one, because she carried quite a bit of the opening.
Yeah.
I just think that there needs to be a little bit more than just, hey, she's a good role model, and it had some good action sequences. I mean, the plot held together. There was never a point where I thought, geez, you guys are being idiots. I did think there was a bit of telegraphing as to who Ares was.
Yeah.
And a surprising amount of exposition from Ares about who Ares was and how he'd been telling people what they needed to know to build the weapons. Oh, but they chose to use them on their own.
I'll be honest, the first scene... pretty sure it was the very first scene Ares was in. I had a nagging feeling that was him.
I didn't really give it a whole lot of thought. I wasn't expecting at that point Ares to be one of the people.
Mm. Well, because she kept saying, I have to go find Ares among the human people.
Yeah, I just took it as there would be somebody behind the scenes, not somebody in the scenes, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
But I just didn't give it a whole lot of thought.
I had been thinking like that when they first left the island. Kind of the, are you delusional? He shouldn't be one of the people you meet.
Mm-hmm.
Then we get to Britain and we meet someone that I'm just like, I kind of think with our luck we're going to be skewering him by the end of the movie.
Well, when he comes and introduces himself.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. Again, Ares is a go-to character. I was a little disappointed that they had pretty much established all the other gods had been killed off.
Mm-hmm.
Zeus may still be out there somewhere, but it sounded like his dying breath was protecting the island and such.
Yeah.
I also would have appreciated if they had established as they got to that ending framing sequence, whether she had ever been able to go back home or not.
Yeah.
But I can also see where creatively, from a big picture point of view, it's smarter to not establish that either way. That way you've got more leeway for other films.
Yeah.
Because if you'd said, oh, she'd never made it back home, that's why she's still in Man's World or whatever, then you can't do a film in which she goes home and does that or, you know.
Yeah.
She did a good job. I'm looking forward to where they go with the Justice League stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Cautiously optimistic on that. But it's one of those things, for a second Wonder Woman film, I don't know when they would pick it up or where they would go with it, but certainly I'd watch it. But again, I'm a fan of the character. At this point, it'd be fun to go watch the couple of seasons of the TV show.
Yeah.
Dated though they may be.
Yeah, well, you know.
Hey, I'm a fan of Lyle Wagner, and certainly Linda Carter did a fantastic job. It would have been nice if they had worked in some kind of a cameo for them in this.
Yeah, it would have.
And I don't know how I would have done that. Even if it had just been Steve Trevor having a photo of his father, that was Lyle Wagner.
Yeah.
Or on the island, they have an oracle or whatnot, and that was Linda Carter.
Yeah.
There are many ways they could have gone. And it's funny because I think on the TV shows for DC, they're very good about acknowledging the actors that have paved the way for the current shows.
Yeah.
Be it movie, TV, whatever.
Oh.
And I'm not really seeing any of that in the current cinematic stuff.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Which is, I think, a little bit of a shame. But so, like I said, this was good. It was fun. I've seen better films, but I didn't think this had any kind of serious flaws either.
Yeah.
So, anything else? Are we good?
No, I think that does it.
Okay.
The show notes and form for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.